Worn by players like Michael Harris to meet the demand of elite ball players, the New Balance Fuel Cell 4040 V7 is a versatile option. The 4040 V7 is built for the athlete who needs responsiveness and ability to cut and run at their full speed. The model features a fuel cell foam underfoot and a synthetic and mesh upper to provide breathability, comfort, and a snug fit as you round the bases. The fuel cell midsole features nitrogen-infused foam specifically designed to propel athletes forward. Learn more about the 4040 at newbalance.com.
Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast from CBS Sports.
Oh, and first pitch, rushing!
Got a fantasy question? Email fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Get ready to win your league.
Where fantasy becomes reality.
Now, here's Frank, Scott, and Chris.
So much happened this weekend. Let's break it all down. Welcome into Fantasy Baseball Today, and welcome to opening week. Monday, April 4th, just 3 days away from the start of the season. I am Frank Stanfield, joined by Scott White and Chris Towers. We've got to talk about injuries, Jacob deGrom and Lance Lynn, the Craig Kimbrel trade, spring risers and fallers, plus I want to try to predict each and every bullpen. It's a lot. I'm optimistic. We'll see. How was the weekend, Chris? How you doing?
Good. I don't think we need to waste much time on it.
That's
right,
true.
Let's get right into it.
Let's get right into it. Moneybag Scott, spending a bunch of FAB in TGFBI.
Yeah. Well, that's the way it turned out, the first run of FAB in TGFBI. There are a lot of interesting players out there because we drafted before spring training began. So, you know, a lot's changed since then. I thought some of these players would go for 200 plus out of a $1,000 budget because that's the way it played out in my TGFBI league last year. But it did not play out that way this year. So I won all of Matt Brash, 15-team roto, by the way. I won all of Matt Brash, Mitch Keller, CJ Abrams, Alex Colome, and Art Warren for a combined $489 of my $1,000 budget. So,
oof.
I mean, they're good players to win.
They sure are.
I'd rather be too aggressive than too passive, but it's a little scary. It's a little scary to use up half your FAB budget right away.
Indeed it is. We'll talk about a few of those players.
Some of them will be among the spring risers, yes.
Yes, we will talk about a few of those players. I have some names that I want to mention that have been confirmed. They're going to be on the opening day roster for their respective teams, and Matt Brash is one of them. But first, let's start with Jacob deGrom. This news came out on Friday. Well, late Thursday night, Scott, we were kind of reacting in real time. We didn't have much information. Then, of course, Friday it comes out that Jacob deGrom was diagnosed with a stress reaction in his right scapula and is shut down for 4 weeks. As a result, we all lowered him quite a bit outside of our top 50 starting pitchers. Scott, you have him 142nd overall. I have him down at 175th, and Chris at 163rd. There were 50 drafts on NFBC Saturday and Sunday. DeGrom's ADP was pick 145. Chris, we'll start with you. Just reaction to Jacob deGrom here. I mean, if you still have drafts remaining, where are you actually looking to select him?
It would be really hard to take him inside of the first 15 rounds, I would say. You know, you reach a point where the upside is worth the risk. And I don't know, I guess when you're talking about the 15th round range or the 12th round range, whatever, you know, whatever you want to call it, your chances of hitting on anyone in that specific range are not great anyway. And there's certainly nobody with the kind of potential to make an impact that Jacob deGrom has. But the problem isn't just that he's going to be shut down at least 4 weeks. Because remember, it's at least 4 weeks. It's actually not at least 4 weeks. It's definitely a lot longer than 4 weeks until we'll see him. But the thing is, it's shut down for 4 weeks, and then they're going to reassess, take a look at the injury, see if it's healed, and then determine if he can start throwing again. And then he would need presumably another month to get back up to speed. So we're probably talking, in an absolute best case scenario, a June return, maybe early to mid June. That's the absolute best case scenario for a guy who already had injury concerns that weren't related to this, at least not specifically related to this. I think it's probably fair to assume that these are related in some way. And so Yeah, I mean, it's not just that, you know, now we know Jacob DeGrom is going to miss 2 months of the season, but the question of whether he could stay healthy is on top of that. So even when he comes back, he then has to be able to remain healthy, given the concerns we already had, and he already hasn't. So, yeah, I can't say I don't that you can't expect anything from Jacob DeGrom, but at this point, you have to draft him as if you're not going to, as if he's not going to be a key part of your team.
And it sucks. It absolutely sucks. Again,
it's
like
the worst.
Baseball and fantasy baseball is much better when Jacob DeGrom is healthy and pitching. I mean, he's one of the best pitchers. We're seeing the stretch right now, a historic stretch for a starting pitcher. Yeah. And it's just unfortunate that it's one injury after another right now for Jacob DeGrom. Scott, I remember, you know, earlier in the offseason, we were talking about how you wanted, you know, I think it was like 6 or 7 of your top 55 starting pitchers. And basically, that list is dwindling because like there's so many injuries that keep taking place. Would you consider Jacob DeGrom, you know, one of those? Like, are you trying? Is he part of that like top? I don't know, one of those top 50 or 55 that you'd like to get on your team now?
Well, that I'm not sure. I'm not exactly sure where that cutoff is anymore because some have entered that group, some have fallen out of that group. Like I've lost some confidence in all three of those Tommy John returnees: Mike Clevenger, Noah Syndergaard, and Luis Severino. So I'm not sure they're part of that group anymore. I do have DeGrom kind of ranked in that range, so a little outside of it. I think I'm probably more willing. I had a couple drafts this weekend and I didn't draft him in either, but I'm probably more willing to draft him than Chris is. Because it's a stress reaction, that's a bone injury, and bone time, the timetable for bone injuries is usually a lot clearer than muscles or certainly ligaments. Now, because it's a stress reaction, that means it's caused by stress, and what caused that stress may be compensating for the elbow. So that presents a complication. But yeah, I mean, like Chris said, there comes a point where you're not missing out on much to take that chance on DeGrom. And where that point is depends so much on league size and to an extent scoring format, mostly league size. But then also, you know, since you were citing NFBC data, and that was one of the two drafts I did over the weekend, no IL spots in that. So if it's a league where he's taken up a bench spot for you for some indeterminate length of time, then he probably deserves to go 50 spots later or something like that.
I'm shocked his ADP was 145 in the NFBC drafts, because those have no IL spots, right?
I think in the main event leagues, it was much lower. I think it was about 50 spots lower. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I saw one where he went 280.
Yeah, I did a draft on Friday, main event for NFBC, and he went 225th. So it was the last pick of round 15. And again, no IL spots. I think the person who drafted DeGrom drafted all the injury guys in a league with no IL spots. It was like DeGrom, Chris Sale, Strasburg, Flaherty. I'm just, what are you doing? I don't know. It doesn't make sense to me.
I'd be fine doing that in a 10-team league with several IL spots.
Yeah, infinite IL spots.
You just backfill off the waiver wire and wait for those guys to come back. And if they don't, by the time, you know, by the time they do come back, you've probably figured something else out anyway. So, you know, that's why I think in shallower leagues, it's much more worth doing. But I would say, you know, if we're talking about all the injured starting pitchers, big starting pitchers who've fallen to injury, DeGrom is should be drafted last of that group. Chris Sale, Jack Flaherty, Lance Lynn, who just went down today. They should all go ahead of DeGrom. I have them a whole tier ahead of DeGrom.
All right, let's talk about Lance Lynn. He will undergo surgery to repair a slight tear in his right knee, and he'll have 4 weeks of rehab followed by 4 weeks of ramping up. So like DeGrom, it seems like the earliest we'll see Lance Lynn is sometime in June. He was also being drafted as a top 20 starting pitcher, the ADP 58.8, 17th starting pitcher off the board. That will not be the case any longer. But Chris, Scott already answered this question. He said that he would rather have Lance Lynn over DeGrom. How about for you if you're still doing a draft?
I don't know. Given that the timetable isn't, man, that's a tough question. It would be Lynn.
The timetable seems real clear for Lynn. That's
right, but you know, that's assuming he avoids any kind of setback. It is a surgery. You know, there's risk there.
The way they
I think
they
it would have
it
to
is,
be Lynn.
the way they put it for Lynn is they expect him to be throwing off a mound after 4 weeks. So that's pretty definitive, as definitive as you're going to get for the recovery from an injury. And of course it's to his knee and not arm related. So
I think it has to be Lynn, but I certainly don't feel great about drafting Lance Lynn. My initial thought was to move him down to about 40 to 43, at starting pitcher. There's upside there. Obviously, Lance Lynn, you know, was a top 20 starting pitcher for me beforehand. But yeah, it'll be tough to draft him within the first 140 picks, I would say.
Yeah, so my initial reaction was I moved Lance Lynn down to SP50. I moved him one spot behind Jacob deGrom, just thinking, you know, best case scenario, if we're projecting both of them to pitch, let's say, two-thirds of the season, obviously DeGrom's upside is still much higher, but I think the risk of re-injury is much greater for Jacob deGrom. So probably got to reconsider that, but I wouldn't be surprised if they go in a similar range in drafts, like whatever, however many drafts are left this week.
I kept Lynn inside my top 40, like 39th. I have, consecutively, I have Chris Sale, followed by Lance Lynn, followed by Jack Flaherty, and then, as I said, DeGrom.
I would much rather have Sale than Lynn at this point.
Okay.
I would say.
And we're still technically waiting for news for Chris Sale. I saw that he wasn't, he's not throwing again yet. He, you know, he's not able to go on a throwing program again, but you know, he says he's feeling better. So
yeah,
that's the good news.
Feeling great. Hopes to be cleared soon.
Yeah. All right. So look, these pitchers are dropping like flies right now. Jacob deGrom, Lance Lynn, Scott, rank these potential waiver ads. It's crazy we're talking about waiver wire already, but a lot of people already did their drafts, and these are names that are rostered in 65% or less of CBS leagues. Jesus Luzardo, Hunter Green, Tony Gonsolin, Matt Brash, who has made the Mariners rotation. Scott, how do you rank those four?
Let me see if I can catch up to my rankings here. So I think I have them Jesus Luzardo 1, Tony Gonsolin 2, Matt Brash, who just looked awesome this spring, 3, and then Hunter Green, 4.
Matt Brash has looked awesome. The fastball, he's throwing, you know, mid to upper 90s, got this awesome breaking pitch as well, but he only really throws two pitches. So it's something I want to watch early in the season to see, you know, how effective he is as a result, but those two pitches are really, really good. So maybe he can succeed in spite of that. Chris, how about for you? Luzardo, Hunter Green, Tony Gonsolin, Matt Brash.
Yeah, I would go Luzardo, Brash, Green. Luzardo, Brash, Gonsolin, Green.
All right, let's talk about Craig Kimbrel. He was traded over to the Los Angeles Dodgers for AJ Pollock, and he is now ranked inside the top 10 relief pitchers for each of us. He's 7th for Scott and Chris. He is the 10th relief pitcher in my rankings. Apologies to anybody who drafted Blake Treinen recently. Craig Kimbrel will be the team's closer. They have confirmed that, though. Yeah. I don't know if this matters at all, but he's been pretty bad in spring. He had another relief appearance this weekend. He allowed 4 earned runs, 2 home runs. And the last we saw of Craig Kimbrel when he was with the White Sox last year, 5.09 ERA, 1.22 whip, lots of fly balls, lots of home runs. So Scott, talk to me about this move, Craig Kimbrel to the Dodgers. We gain another closer that we feel good about the role and hopefully the skills, but I don't know, spring and his second half was not so good.
Yeah, I'm uneasy about the performance, and I was last spring too, because, you know, he was plagued by injuries, yes, but also awful in 2019 and 2020. The stuff looked good still, but he wasn't commanding it very well, and a lot of injuries. Then he was awful last spring, so I kept myself from drafting him. And obviously came to regret that, because in 39 appearances for the Cubs, he had a 0.49 ERA, 0.71 whip, 15.7 K per nine. It was his arguably the best closer in the game at the time he was traded to the White Sox, back to being the best closer in the game. So, you know, I don't know that we should put that much stock in his spring performance. The Dodgers traded for him and with the intention immediately of making him their closer. So, I mean, that's an organization I trust their evaluation of players as much as any other, but it does make me a little, look, I'm not somebody who's going to pay up for a top six closer anyway, but if I was, you know, I could see going like Ryan Presley ahead of him. If you just if you felt safer with that, I wouldn't blame you.
Yeah, so I have Kimbrell at 10, just ahead. I have Jordan Romano, Chapman, who I'm like, don't feel great about either, but Kenley Jansen, Presley, Class A, Diaz. I would take all of those closers ahead of Craig Kimbrell as well. Chris talked to me about AJ Pollock. He slots in as the right fielder for the White Sox, and I know that he's someone that you've talked about liking so far this offseason. Technically a slight park upgrade for him as well, so what do you think about this move for AJ Pollock?
Yeah, I mean, he's been awesome the past two seasons. There was a swing change a couple of years ago that seems to have helped out. And it is a park upgrade, and I think it's a slight upgrade in terms of expected playing time. I don't think it's a significant enough one to really change how you view AJ Pollock one way or the other. But he is, I think he's going to be very productive when he's in the lineup. And I think he'll be in the lineup more for the White Sox than he was going to be with the Dodgers, so I think it's a good thing for him. And you know, Pollock's the kind of guy that you don't really have to draft him inside of the top 200, but he's probably going to be a pretty beneficial player for your team, especially in leagues with daily lineups where you can, you know, take advantage of the times he's in the lineup and then slot him out when he's not. I'm you know, I didn't move him as a result of the trade, but I probably had him ranked higher than you guys did already. I think I had him, he was already inside of my top 200. So yeah, I like AJ Pollock. He's a nice player to have around.
Chris, also talk to me about what this might mean for Andrew Vaughn. I know Vaughn is someone you've talked about liking this offseason and comes with a lot of prospect pedigree. It was a weird season for him last year where he's trying to learn a new position and it's his, you know, first taste of the majors, kind of like rush to the majors as well. But it seems like there might be a natural platoon there with him and Gavin Sheets as the designated hitter. So I feel like this might hurt Andrew Vaughn.
Yeah, I mean, I think it ultimately comes down to what Vaughn does. If Vaughn hits the way the White Sox clearly hope he can and the way we think he can based on his prospect pedigree and his minor league production, then I don't think playing time is going to be much of a concern for him. He'll fill in at first base occasionally. He'll play the outfield when AJ Pollock's not playing the outfield, and then he'll DH. So it's just a question of whether he can figure it out. And Paul Konerko had some really, really praiseworthy things to say about Andrew Vaughn today and just his approach and his swing. So that was interesting to see. But yeah, he's definitely someone that I think has more risk of not playing every day as a result of this. And I wouldn't expect him to be in the everyday lineup, but like if Andrew Vaughn gets off to a hot start, I don't know, maybe Gavin Sheets will be enough to keep him out of the lineup. But I think Gavin Sheets is pretty good, but Andrew Vaughn is an important part of what the White Sox want to do moving forward. And he's presumably the future at first base with Jose Abreu in his mid to late 30s. So I can't imagine they're going to block him completely, like have him on the short side of a platoon if he's hitting.
Right. No, I can't imagine that either, but I can't imagine them just like making Gavin Sheets a bench player either, because they do seem to like Gavin Sheets, and he bats left-handed, and he was at least last September getting more at bats than Vaughn. I don't think that's how it's going to play out now. Sheets was one of those players I dropped to pick up all those players in TGFBI. But I'm a little worried about Vaughn.
Yeah.
With this. Meanwhile, on the other side, you got another Gavin Lux, who suddenly has a much clearer path to playing time for the Dodgers. Presumably, they'll continue to platoon him, though they don't have an obvious right-handed hitter who needs to be in the lineup anymore.
Yeah, his situation's just, he needs to hit. Like it's sink or swim time for Gavin Lux, and he's not so old that like it's entirely down to this, but with the Dodgers, with the way they handled someone like Jock Peterson, if you remember, he was a top 10, top 20 type prospect when he got called up, and they were pretty willing early on to just have him be a part-time player. So if Gavin Lux, you know, can't hit lefties, and really so far in the majors, he hasn't really shown much of anything. Mm-hmm. You know, that there really isn't all that much in his major league numbers, you know, in terms of the overall production or the underlying. But obviously Gavin Lux was, you know, he hit what, 340 in 2019 in the minors. He was one of the top prospects in baseball. I'm excited to see a somewhat more clear path to playing time for him. He's got to do it now.
Yeah, I don't know where he pops off the screen, right? He had a strong September, and maybe I use that term loosely. He hit 360 with a 967 OPS, but
Was terrible. It was like a bunch of singles.
It was with one homer and one steal. You know, only 17 games, so it's a small sample size. I mean, he looked good down the stretch. They were fine. They wanted to find ways to get Lux in the lineup. They were playing him in the outfield in their most pivotal games in the postseason because they wanted Gavin Lux's bat in the lineup. So I think they still like him. You're right. He's got to show us something. He's got to do something.
Right now, he doesn't pop out off the screen. Like there's nothing about what Gavin Lux has done at the major league level that makes you think this is a future key part of a very good team. So it's mostly just belief in the pedigree and what he did at the high minors. I mean, he was arguably the best hitter in the minors in 2019 between double A and triple A. He put up, bonkers numbers. And so, I'm moving him up for sure as a result of this. And, he's now someone that goes from, I didn't really care if I drafted him to, I'll take a late round flyer on him. He's in my top 24 second baseman now.
A very deep name to pay attention to for the Dodgers, Edwin Rios. They said that they were comfortable making this trade because of the spring Edwin Rios is having, and he has gone 7-for-21, 3 homers, 5 walks to 5 strikeouts, and a couple of years ago, he had a monster season in the minors. So they still like this guy, and if he's performing well, they got a lot of injury-prone players on this team, so he could work his way into playing time as well.
Yeah, they could have him DH. They could stick Max Muncy at second.
Yep.
Yeah, there's a way they can form their lineup with him in and Lux out.
Yep. So NL only leagues for now, and then if he plays well, then maybe he'll work his way up. Sean Manaea was traded over to the San Diego Padres in exchange for 2 prospects, and I think it's a big upgrade for Manaea in terms of team context and run support, obviously. But you could argue tougher competition here: Dodgers, Giants in the same division. Now he's going to have to pitch some games in Coors Field, obviously. I moved him up a few spots, SP31. I've been ahead of the pack, ahead of you guys on Sean Manaea. He's someone that I do like drafting quite a bit. But moving him up was more so a result of just moving other pitchers down. Like Blake Snell, I started to move down a little bit. Luis Castillo. And as a result, Sean Manaea is someone that moves up a little bit. Scott, what do you think about this move? Does it matter really for Sean Manaea's fantasy value?
I mean, I'd rather him pitch for the Padres than the Athletics. The truth is, if I really expected him to stay with the Athletics all year, I probably should have ranked him lower than I had him. Because after this trade, I looked at it and I said, okay, do I need to move Sean Manaea up? And remember, I've been grouping him with Nathan Eovaldi and Tyler Mahle all this time. And I still think I'd rather have Nathan Eovaldi and Tyler Mahle. It's a pretty crowded situation. It sounds like they're going to go, I don't think they've ruled out going 6-man. A lot of teams are going 6-man at the start. So maybe we don't need to hold that against them. But Mike Clevinger will be on the IL to start the year with a knee issue, minor knee thing. Mm-hmm. I think more than anything, they just want to give him time to get ready coming back from Tommy John. And then of course they still have Nick Martinez. If they go 6-man, I guess that still leaves room for Mackenzie Gore. But the point is when
Paddock, who was in treatment.
Oh, that's true. Paddock's there. Yeah. The point is when everybody's healthy, it's a really crowded group. And I'm not saying Sean Manaea is going to get bumped because of that, but there's more pressure on him to perform.
I mean, I'll say it's possible.
Yeah.
Like with Sean Manaea hasn't been such a can't miss pitcher that this is a situation that he couldn't lose a spot in a strong rotation. I mean, he had a 4.5 ERA in 2020. His peripherals in 2021 were a little all over the place. If you look at xERA, he was above 4. So I think there's a chance on Sean Manaea loses a rotation spot at some point.
Come on, guys. I'm right here. Like,
it's nothing personal.
You act like he's your son, Frank.
Nah, that's fair. Sean Manaea, something I want to pay attention to early in the season for him is velocity. So I think there was one game where there were some velocity readings for Manaea in the spring, and they were down compared to last year. A big reason why I've liked drafting him so far this offseason was his underlying numbers were much better than the surface level numbers, and he had a big velo jump last year. So I do want to see that carry over, obviously, into this season with the Padres now. Players who have made their opening day roster, a lot of these players, I think it was kind of a foregone conclusion, but we've get some confirmation over the weekend. Bobby Witt Jr., John Heyman reported it of all people. I'm just like, all right, no Royals beat writers or anything else. I guess it's a big story, but just thought that was interesting. Bobby Witt will start on opening day and likely be the third baseman for the Kansas City Royals. Spencer Torkelson will be the starting first baseman for the Detroit Tigers. He's made the team. Matt Brash, we mentioned earlier, will be the fifth starting pitcher in the Mariners rotation. He's 33% rostered. If you suffered some injuries early on and you want to look to add a starting pitcher, Stephen Kwan, someone I mentioned recently in our Deep Sleepers episode with the Cleveland Guardians, he's made their opening roster and they need help in the outfield, so this is someone who makes a lot of contact, could hit for batting average. I think he has a few steals in the spring as well, so maybe chip in a little bit of speed. Spencer Strider, Scott, your boy Spencer Strider, he made the Atlanta Braves, and he's a candidate to be a starter if they want to go with a six-man rotation. I don't know if they've actually revealed their plans yet completely with that, but Spencer Strider will be on the team at least.
Yeah, well, it's a 28-man roster. His last spring start, he got knocked around pretty good, and I was reading one of their beat writers, and they think he needs more work on his secondaries. And of course, he started out last year at low A, so that's not surprising. I think he's going to be up to be a reliever with Tucker Davidson filling the fifth spot if they need, or the sixth spot if they need to go six man. So I would not expect Strider to stick around long, but and not in a role that's going to be particularly useful. But of course, if he blows the doors down, that could change things.
And then there's a few other names here. Chris, if a player hasn't been optioned to this point, do you feel good about that prospect making the opening day roster? I mean, three names that stand out to me very clearly: Julio Rodriguez, who had another monster game on Sunday, Bryson Stott, who's hitting, I believe, over 500 for the Phillies, and then CJ Abrams, who I really thought was like a very slim chance of him making the opening day roster. Mm-hmm. It actually looks kind of likely now. So what do you think about those three?
Yeah, I mean, AAA season starts on the 5th, not the 7th. So they actually have to be ready a couple days early. And I think there are probably some extenuating circumstances with some players who haven't been optioned. But yeah, with Rodriguez, Stott, and Abrams, I think at this point, I'm assuming those guys are going to make their teams. And that is incredibly exciting for Rodriguez, who is an absolute must draft and probably top 150 pick at this point.
I keep moving him up. I keep moving him up. And
what's
not
the argument
him,
for
so moving
what's
him up
the argument more? For him being significantly behind Bobby Witt? I mean, Bobby Witt played at AAA, which Julio Rodriguez didn't get. As did Julio Rodriguez make it to AAA?
No.
Okay, so Bobby Witt presumably more ready, certainly more seasoned,
More proven in the minors, I guess.
I don't think the upside is significantly different for these guys. I mean, these are both potential fantasy superstars. And so, yeah, Julio Rodriguez needs to be moved up a lot.
Yeah. He is up to 148 for Scott. I have him inside my top 140. He's someone that just keeps climbing for me, too. 136th. I think he's right around my 40th outfielder now in the rankings. And I think once we get
him
that
up to 130,
once we get that actual confirmation that he's on the roster, I mean, I could see moving him up even further. So
now he seems like the most surefire. I would be very surprised if Julio Rodriguez doesn't make the roster at this point. Stott, I think, you know, Alec Bohm's been doing work with Kevin Long to shorten his swing, and the past couple of days have gone better. I think if the Phillies decide they want Bohm at third base, Stott's going back down. So I'm not necessarily counting on that one. The one we need to really talk about here, though, I think, is CJ Abrams, because we haven't really discussed him as a realistic possibility, and he's a consensus top 10 prospect himself. He would be making a very big leap, sort of like Julio Rodriguez would be, but the Padres have shown a willingness to do that with Fernando Tatis himself, with Chris Paddock, guys who, you know, they just made such a strong impression in spring training that the team decided they were ready, and it worked out great for both of them in their rookie seasons. Abrams has 80 grade speed, pretty much top of the scale contact ability too. And yes, scouts were hoping he'd develop power. He's hit for power this spring at least. So like there's an all around more than anything, the speed is something we need to be excited about. Like that alone should get him drafted in rotisserie leagues. It's not clear that he would be. We were talking before, and I think you said, Frank, you saw somewhere like he'd start out as a platoon at shortstop.
Yeah, strong side platoon, bat against right-handed pitching. That's what Bob Melvin was saying.
Right, because he bats left-handed. of course, if your up and coming superstar is playing well, I think that's only going to continue to earn him more at bats. He can play center field, you know, when Tatis comes back, if Tatis has shown he can play the outfield too. So like, I don't think it's going to be like, if Abrams is up and he performs, he's not overwhelmed, like he's going to be up all year. He's going to be playing a ton. I wouldn't even really consider role so much for him. It's just, is he here or is he not here? And if he's here, then he should be rostered everywhere. And like, that was one of the guys I blew out my fab budget for in TGFBI, and I'm surprised no one else did.
And again, that's a 15-team roto league, so speed is hard to come by, and it makes sense that you're being aggressive there in terms of the fab bid. Scott, loaded question here. Four prospects who they're basically all having good springs. We know with O'Neill Cruz that he's not going to start with the Pirates, but O'Neill Cruz, Jeremy Pena with the Astros, who there's been some buzz about, CJ Abrams, Bryson Stott. How do you rank those four?
Okay, it depends on the format. O'Neill Cruz, one. CJ Abrams, two, but closing in on one. And then there's a gap. I would go Pena over Stott in Roto. I would go Stott over Pena in points.
All right, makes sense to me. Before we get to some other news and notes, there's bunch of stuff that happened this weekend. Thank you so much for all of your listener league submissions. We appreciate all of your thought and creativity. Some really great stuff that we received. There was a video like recreating the clown scene, but with Scott, it's like someone like made an animation out of it. It was amazing. So between that and songs and poems and people making up lyrics and just the great stories that we received. Again, we really, really do appreciate all of your submissions.
I don't know how I got like my facial construction in cartoon form. It's like he turned me into a South Park character. It was
very
strange.
Impressive.
It was so good. Maybe I'll play it at the end or beginning of...
I was literally shaking after watching it.
It was good. But these will be the names. I have chosen the names who will be in this week's 16-team head-to-head categories for the People Draft. Again, Tuesday, April 5th, 8 p.m. Eastern Time. We'll be doing that draft live on YouTube. We'll turn it into a podcast as well. We had 12 spots available since Scott, Chris, me, and whoever wins the FBT Bracket Challenge. We're still waiting for the national championship game on Monday night. Those will be the four other spots. But without further ado, here are the 12 that will be competing against us. Neil Kaplan, Jocelyn Corkum, Brendan Sargent, Andrew Skalicki, Tanner Frost, Colin Faint, Adam Najemi, Matthew Burnett, Jason Gallup, Joshua Weddle, Ashley Harper, and Doug Rowe. If you heard your name, please come to the front of the classroom. No, I'll reach out to you and I'll get your email and I'll send out some invites and we'll get everything set up before Tuesday's draft. But if you just heard your name, I'll be in touch and we'll make it happen. Let's take a quick break. And when we return, talk about Max Scherzer, Zach Wheeler, Ronald Acuna, a few other notes. And then we'll get to spring risers, fallers, and some bullpens as well. Here, Fantasy Baseball Today. If you've ever been in the market for a new home, you know home shopping can be a lot. There's so much you don't know and so much you need to know. What are the neighborhoods like? What are the schools like? Who is the agent who knows the listing or neighborhood best? And why can't all this information just be in one place? Well, now it is on Homes.com. As somebody who's been through this, I can tell you these features are so, so incredibly valuable. They've got comprehensive neighborhood guides and detailed reports about local schools, and their agent directory helps you see the agent's current listings and sales history. The area you live in is just as important as the house itself. You can get to know a neighborhood without ever setting foot in it. Say you're a really active person. You could find out about the nearest parks. Do they have a baseball field? Maybe you want to join a softball league like Chris and I play in. Also, Homes.com collaboration tools makes it easier than ever to share all this information with your family. It's a whole cul-de-sac of home shopping information all at your fingertips. Homes.com, we've done your homework.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn four times points on your top two eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express.
4 times points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
All right, so let's talk about Max Scherzer. He tweaked his hamstring on Friday. He'll throw a bullpen session on Tuesday, and if all goes well, should be able to start on opening day. Zach Wheeler threw 45 pitches over 2 innings on Saturday in a minor league start, and Joe Girardi said that Wheeler is expected to throw 60 pitches in his next outing on Thursday, and if all goes well, he should make his season debut next Tuesday. That's April 12th against the Mets. So far, so good for Zach Wheeler. Ronald Acuna played in a simulated game on Saturday. The plan is still for him to return in early May. Tigers outfield prospect, this was a big one this weekend too. Riley Green diagnosed with a fractured foot. He won't have surgery, but he'll be out 6 to 8 weeks before he can go on a rehab assignment. So this one's looking more like 8 to 10 weeks, maybe something like that. So we see him the middle of June, end of June. Mm-hmm. Maybe if they want to play it safe, we don't see him until the second half of the season.
I think he would have been on the opening day roster if not for this. So that's super frustrating.
Yeah, he was having a strong spring as well. I'll pull up the numbers here for him. He was 9 for 21, 2 homers, 3 walks, 6 strikeouts, 429 batting average, 1548 OPS. Small sample, but Riley Green looked awesome. Scott, if you're still doing drafts, do you look to select Riley Green with the hope of stashing him on the IL? Well, actually, no. You're probably not going to be able to stash him because he's going to be on the minor league IL. So, yeah, you won't even be able to.
Yeah, I would assume they option him down.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. Is he on the 40-man roster? If he's on the 40-man roster, then he may go on the 60-day IL. But I'm not sure.
Well, but why would they put him on the 60-day IL? It's not necessarily a...
I don't think they have a... Okay, he's not on the 40-man roster.
No, so he's not.
Yeah.
Yeah, he'll almost certainly be optioned back to AAA.
So that makes it harder to draft him, Scott, because we can't even put him on an IL spot then.
Yep.
All right.
Yeah, I probably won it.
Yeah.
In a 12-team league, I don't think you can.
It's tough. Yeah. Justin Upton was designated for assignment by the Angels. And then they said that Joe Adell, Brandon Marsh, and Taylor Ward are all in line for significant playing time. So good news for our guy, Joe Adell there. Justin Upton, he was having a strong spring. I think he'll probably wind up with another team soon. D-backs utility man Josh Rojas will be out, quote, weeks, not days, with a grade 2 right oblique strain. Geraldo Perdomo is a name to watch in deeper leagues if you need speed. He has 2 minor league seasons with 24 or more steals. Again, the name there, Geraldo Perdomo, likely to start at shortstop for the D-backs. Austin Meadows exited Sunday's game with quad tightness in both legs. If he can't go to start the season, maybe we see Vidal Brujan back on the roster, maybe Josh Lowe, so something to pay attention to there. Mike Clevinger was scratched from Sunday's start with knee soreness. He's a candidate to open the season on the IL, as Scott mentioned, which would allow Nick Martinez to stay in the rotation. Orioles manager Brandon Hyde said Sunday that Adley Rutschman has resumed hitting and throwing after dealing with a tricep strain. Good news, Scott, for Ranger Suarez. He's expected to make his regular season debut on Monday, April 11th, against the New York Mets. Garrett Crochet will undergo Tommy John surgery. And in 2 trades that went down over the weekend, the Marlins acquired Cole Sulcer and Tanner Scott for a Comp B draft pick, Antonio Velez, Kevin Guerrero, and a player to be named later. Chris, I'm not sure that we want anything to do with either of these bullpens right now, but Marlins, Orioles, do you have a lean here?
I don't know. You have to think they made this trade with, the idea that not having Dylan Floro, they needed some more back end bullpen help. So maybe they lean Sulcer. I don't really have a feel for it. Like the Marlins want a closer. This is they're definitely a team that prefers to have one guy if they can. But I have no idea who that guy is going to be right now.
Yeah, I hated seeing this trade as somebody who just drafted Dylan Floro again last night, because now they're just if Sulcer's getting it done right away, or maybe they go Anthony Bender instead. Still, if they're getting it done by the time Floro gets back, I mean, there just may not be justification to change. It's not like he was some relief ace who was always destined for the closer role,
Yeah, Anthony Bender was
Bender's good.
Yeah, Bender's good. 2.79 ERA last season, 1.06 whip, 10.4 K per nine. He throws hard, averages 97 with the fastball. He's got a strong slider. He gets ground balls, nearly 50% ground ball rate. I think he's a good pitcher. He's having a strong spring, mm-hmm. too. So if I had to guess who the first person up for the Marlins is, I think it's going to be Bender, but they have some names. They have Bass. They have Cole Sulcer as well now. So we'll see. And for the Orioles, I mean, it gets worse and worse. Like, they just don't have anybody. They have, like, Jorge Lopez was better as a reliever last season. Somebody tweeted at me, yeah. Felix Bautista. He has 11 saves in the minors, lots of strikeouts, but...
You know, I think as somebody who was starting to maybe flirt with the idea of drafting Cole Sulcer, I'm kind of relieved this trade happened, because that would have probably been a poor investment given how few saves the Orioles are going to have and how inconsistent and how, you know, just what's happened with him the past couple of years is basically no one's ever, they haven't gotten save chances often enough for anybody to really seize the role. And I suspect that's how it's going to go again.
And yeah. they spread it around too. Right. Brandon Hyde has been there since 2019. His two full seasons, he hasn't had a reliever with more than 11 saves. So pretty gross.
Which is also a product of not having many good relievers, which is also an issue for the Orioles still. So it's,
yep.
Like, if they had one good reliever, I'm sure they would settle on him. But this is a team that is not trying to win games.
Yeah. It's kind of like what happened last year with the Cincinnati Reds. Like, I'm sure they want a closer, but, you know, no one's really stepping up and getting it done. One other trade here. The White Sox acquired Reese McGuire from the Blue Jays for Zach Collins. Scott, I saw you tweeting about this. Do you think this could actually affect Alejandro Kirk's playing time?
Yes, I do. I took the tweet down because I wasn't as confident. The more I looked into it, them getting Zach Collins back, okay, that's a third catcher. Collins has options, as I understand it, and Reese McGuire doesn't. So yeah. It still seems likely they're planning on beginning the year with just two catchers. And if you have only two catchers on your roster, it's difficult to play one at DH, because then if he has to replace the catcher, you lose the DH spot. So, you know, I'm not saying I'm off Alejandro Kirk because of this, but it's not what you want to see.
It's not what you want to see. Let's get into spring risers and fallers. Let's start with the good news there. The players that have been moving up our draft boards, moving up our rankings. Chris, why don't you get us started? A few names that have been climbing up for you.
Well, Joe Adell, who didn't need to have a good spring, but it's been very good to see him having a good spring, hitting the ball very hard. And the plate discipline's been, you know, good enough. 8 strikeouts and 36 plate appearances. So, you know, that's the big concern for Joe Adell. I've liked him all along. Obviously, anybody who's listened to the podcast knows that. But yeah, Joe Adell is someone that I'm drafting pretty much in all of my leagues if I got the opportunity. And, you know, I don't think there's any question that he's got a ton of upside. And he's showing it in spring training. So I'm very excited about Joe Adell. 3 homers, 3 steals in 13 games. You know, we talk about Julio Rodriguez and Bobby Witt, and I don't know if Joe Adell has that kind of upside, specifically with the stolen bases. But, I mean, he's that kind of prospect. And just because he's been around for a while and we've been talking him up, I mean, you can go back to 2019 and listen to preseason 2019 podcasts where we're talking about Joe Adell and saying he's someone potentially worth stashing. So I get why people have some fatigue with him and think, oh, maybe he's not that guy anymore. But all he's done is produced in the minors since then. He had, you know, a really bad 2020 in the majors, which, given the circumstances, I don't hold that much against him. He showed promise last season and signs of improvement. Joe Adell, very, very excited. Good yeah. spring.
And again, the home runs that he's hitting, these are monster shots too. Like, we mentioned it in the StatCast ability. It's the max exit velocity and the sprint speed. Like, the tools are there. It's just, you know, can he make contact enough? And so far this spring and last year when he got his opportunity in the majors again, he did that. So I think, again, he makes contact, good things will happen for Joe Adell. Scott, some players that have been rising up the ranks and draft boards for you throughout spring.
Well, I have a long list of names here.
Let's go.
Miraculously, we've talked about many of them already. So let me just rattle off a few so that we
can. Yeah, I didn't want to mention names that we've already mentioned or that I know you guys are going to mention.
I'll just go ahead and rattle some of them off. Matt Brash, Hunter Green, Bryson Stott, Jeremy Pena, Spencer Torkelson, CJ Abrams, Gavin Lux.
Although one thing I did want to bring up with Matt Brash.
Okay.
He's not necessarily, did George Kirby get sent down already?
Yes.
No, he's won the job. He's been confirmed.
No. I just wasn't sure if George Kirby still had a chance to make the roster.
Okay.
I will confirm it, but I am like 80% sure I saw. Yeah. He will begin the season at AA, George Kirby.
Okay.
Yep.
He's very exciting as well.
The Padres beat writer for MLB.com, AJ Casavell, who is the one who's really talking like CJ Abrams has a chance of winning the everyday job. He is also saying that Robert Suarez is looking like a strong bet to begin the year in the closer role for the Padres. And so that is somebody I would consider a riser. He was a closer in Japan the past couple of years, a very successful one, especially last year at a 1.16 ERA. Throws a lot of strikes, gets a lot of ground balls. They have alternatives there if he doesn't work out, but they seem pretty happy. They seem pretty happy with what they've seen. Yeah, Lamet's interesting with that fastball slider pairing, but he's
having a rough spring.
Was he bad today? Because his numbers were really good before today.
It might have been today then. I was looking earlier.
He had six strikeouts and four innings, one run allowed before today.
And I know something that has prevented good relievers from getting closer roles in the past is like you have to be available a lot to be a closer. Mm-hmm. And given Lamet's history, I don't know that they're in a place right now where they can count on him to be. Even if maybe they will be at some point. Well, Jesus Luzardo, we haven't talked about him yet. Except enlisting pitchers we'd like to have. But yeah, his velocity way up this spring. He's been throwing his breaking ball a lot more, which is exactly what we want. Even without the velocity jump, like that looked like that was going to be the key to his breakthrough because his fastball just wasn't that effective of a pitch, but he had good secondaries. And so we had some hope that the Marlins would get him and change up his pitch mix, and maybe that would allow him to meet his potential. Now he's throwing his fastball like 99 miles per hour. Maybe it'll be an effective pitch too, and we get the best of both worlds. So Luzardo, you've made the comparison before, Frank, to Lucas Giolito, needing a couple years, taking his lumps for a couple years before just suddenly taking off. And I think that's a interesting comp for Jesus Luzardo. Stephen Kwan has made the Guardians opening day roster. And last I looked, hasn't been updated with today's stats, but last I looked, he had not struck out in 29 plate appearances this spring. And that's, you look at his minor league track record, he makes a ton of contact. He started hitting for power between AA and AAA last year, hit 12 home runs in 77 games, slugged .527.
Love to see some Statcast data on him. Either from the minors or from spring training, just because if there's something behind those 12 home runs in 77 games last season, it makes him a lot more interesting. If not, I'm super wary of the good plate discipline, no power profile.
He's free, though, is the thing.
Oh, No. He's worth drafting.
It's not clear that he has a job. Like, he's free even in like 15 team leagues.
Yeah.
I drafted him in a 10 teamer tonight. But it's a full minus one for strikeouts, full minus one point for strikeouts for hitters. So it just seemed like he was well suited for that format. But anyway, yeah, it's not clear he has an everyday job yet for the Guardians, but like their outfield is trash. So I'm not saying the people.
No, that's deserved.
No, I understand.
That is deserved.
Okay. People get offended when you say you call players trash. Okay. Like, obviously I'm talking about their numbers being trash.
Just I don't hear you say it often, Scott. So when you do, it's just yeah. catches me by surprise, like a little Scotty slam dunk all over the Cleveland Guardians outfield. Roster Resource has Stephen Kwan in a platoon for now, but again, the names here: Bradley Zimmer, Owen Miller. Owen Miller, I think, is having a good spring. Oscar Mercado, he's had chances, hasn't been able to do anything. So, look, if Stephen Kwan hits, he's going to get an opportunity. For me, Justin Verlander, mentioned him a ton so far the past couple of weeks. He's up to SP15 in my rankings. He's got a 1.32 ERA in spring. Velocity is there, over a strikeout per inning. He looks like Justin Verlander so far. Matt Brash, you mentioned, Scott. Spencer Torkelson. Torkelson only has 4 strikeouts in 30 plate appearances. I thought that was really impressive for him. And some deep league names. We're talking AL, NL only, 15-team roto. Merrill Kelly, I brought his name up once before.
I meant to bring him up. Yeah,
he's been really good so far. And Brent Strom is the pitching coach in Arizona now. So 7 innings pitched, just 1 hit, 13 strikeouts.
Isn't his velocity up too?
It wasn't. It was up in his first start. There was actually StatCast data for his second start, and it was up like half a mile per hour.
Because he's been getting a lot of strikeouts too. And he said he put in a lot of work in his changeup this offseason because he says it hasn't been very good the past 2 years. So he's made what sounds like could be a significant arsenal change. Because he's in the Cactus League, we don't have a lot of data to really back this up. But looking at the results and looking what's being said about him, and the fact the Diamondbacks just over the weekend signed him to an extension, so they like what they see. Mm-hmm. Merrill Kelly is in deeper leagues somebody who I'm starting to get kind of interested in.
Other very deep names: Diego Castillo, not the reliever for the Mariners, projected to start at second base for the Pirates. He's hitting .321 with 5 homers in spring. Kevin Smith now with the Oakland A's. He's been hitting .333, 3 homers, 2 steals. Kyle Higashioka leads all of spring training with 7 home runs. He's batting .478, 11 for 23 so far. He
like reworked his swing.
Yeah.
He modeled it after Josh Donaldson. He's always had some pop. I think I moved him up into my top 20 catchers just because why not? There's not very many good ones anyway. So
in 2 catcher leagues.
That's what I'm saying, is he's someone who's worth adding. Like, I'd rather have him than Carson Kelly in a 2 catcher league, and at least just hope that there's some kind of lightning in a bottle thing going on there.
Yep. Good lineup. Ballpark to hit in as well. So
a lot of playing time.
Yeah, I know they traded for Jose Trevino over the weekend. He's likely going to be the backup catcher to start the year, but Higashioka is the guy. Gerrit Cole really likes him too. So, you know, if nothing else, you have the support of the ace on the pitching staff. Mickey Moniak is the last one I wanted to mention here. Former first overall pick back in 2016, a long time ago. He's 9 for 29. He's hit 5 home runs and apparently working very closely with Kevin Long. Everyone wants to work with Kevin Long now. He reworked Kyle Schwarber's swing last offseason. We saw the results there. But he is very respected as a hitting coach, and he's done this time and time again. And apparently Mickey Moniak might be the latest there with Kevin Long.
A couple deep names that I'm sure we haven't really brought up on the podcast before that just caught my attention this weekend. Paul DeJong of the Cardinals. He worked with some hitting guru this offseason. And we've known, I forget which one of the famous ones who's worked with a bunch of other hitters to help them fix their swings. We've seen guys have big turnarounds because of that. And he's had a huge performance this spring. So I think he's back to being something of a sleeper there at shortstop. And David Peralta suddenly hitting for power. I believe his story is similar. I don't have it ready to go off the top of my head. Okay, so here it is. He worked with somebody to fix his swing. Sorry.
I saw something similar too, Scott. And then the numbers are jumping off the page so far. 9 for 27, 4 homers, 3 doubles.
Now, again, these are deeper league plays. If it's a standard head-to-head lineup, 3 outfielders, 1 shortstop, you're never going to get to David Peralta and Paul DeJong. But like, if you're in leagues where over 300 players are drafted in late rounds, and you know, the obvious, some of the more obvious spring risers like Matt Brash, Jeremy Pena, they're all gone. You know, it doesn't take much You look for upside anywhere you can find it. Like, it doesn't take much for you to squint and say, okay, I could see how this guy could have a bigger year than people are expecting. And I think David Peralta and Paul DeJong fall into that category.
All right, let's get over to some fallers. We're not going to get to bullpens today. I'll save that for tomorrow. We've got bold predictions coming up tomorrow as well. We'll hit the bullpens. We haven't talked about each bullpen individually in a while, so I just want to quickly run through that and try and predict whoever we think is going to lead that their respective team in saves. Chris, why don't you get us kicked off here with some fallers throughout spring?
Okay, it's harder to do spring fallers, but I don't think you can do this conversation without talking about Cody Bellinger, who's just, I mean, he fell to 142nd in a draft that I'm currently doing, a slow draft. He has 17 strikeouts and 28 plate appearances. That's almost a two-thirds strikeout rate. That is just impossibly bad. He's been talking about how he doesn't seem too concerned about it. You know, he's talking about how he's working on his swing, and there was a funny quote about getting the strikeouts out of the way now so they aren't there in the regular season. But this was the, you know, there's been a lot of Cody Bellinger versus Christian Yelich discussion this season or this preseason. And one of the things that made me prefer Christian Yelich was that he just kind of, it seemed like he just needed to get healthy or be healthy. Whereas Cody Bellinger, like, he looked lost. There wasn't anything promising about Cody Bellinger last season. Even the postseason when he, you know, had like a 900 OPS, it was a lot of singles. And so, you know, even the underlying numbers, he wasn't hitting the ball hard at all. It just, we're hearing nearly daily reports about him changing his swing and his setup. And I don't know, maybe it's all an overreaction and it won't matter and all that, but I don't see how you can't be pretty terrified about Cody Bellinger right now.
Well, we got an update on Friday. Apparently, Dave Roberts said that Bellinger may have found a batting stance that he likes. Quote, I think he's found a consistent setup and now he just needs to get the repetitions. I don't know. Maybe it was some cruel April Fool's joke.
Look, it's... Like I said, I drafted him 142nd overall when he fell there in a head-to-head points league. It wasn't like I needed an outfielder, but it was one of those things where Cody Bellinger just kept falling, and at some point, the talent's worth it. But it's terrifying right now. Like this is, I know spring training doesn't matter, but this is not a guy who just needs to go through the motions. At least from my perspective, like yeah. Cody Bellinger has something to prove to me.
Right.
And
no, that's the thing. I mean, it's one thing for Dave Roberts to say, oh, yeah, he's fixed, you know, but like he doesn't get the benefit of the doubt anymore.
Yeah.
Chris, I was going to say, who would you draft, Chris, right now? A riser versus a faller, Julio Rodriguez or Cody Bellinger?
If both were sitting there, I think I would take Julio Rodriguez. Because there is a better chance that people are just going to keep passing on Bellinger.
Scott,
on what I've seen this week, at least.
Scott, would you take Julio or?
I would definitely take Julio.
Mm. Yeah. All right.
Yeah. Definitely.
All right.
Honestly, I have more confidence in him.
Yeah. No, I look. It's hard to blame you again. Like spring, for the most part, for veterans does not matter, but for players that we need something. We need. You know, players who should be out to prove something, right? Like prospects or players coming off down seasons or injuries. Like you need to see something. And Bellinger is one of those names. And so far, again, we haven't seen it.
And I feel like strikeout rate's one of the things that matters more, especially when it's excessive one way or the other. Like I mentioned it for Kwan and I'll mention it for Bellinger too.
Yep. All right, Scott, any fallers for you?
Why, yes.
Well, the question
Bellinger's the biggest one. It's harder to find fallers than risers.
Yeah,
just because you don't want to bury anybody based on spring stuff. But of course, Dylan Floro's a faller for reasons we mentioned earlier. Alec Bohm's a faller, given the potential for him to lose his job to Bryson Stott. Although he's been doing work with Kevin Long and has been hitting better in recent days. So I think I already said that this podcast, right?
Yes.
Mike Clevenger's a faller. He hasn't looked good. Luis Severino, he's had a lot of reasons for concern, though his last start was good. I'd still call him a faller. Blake Snell, a faller.
Luis Castillo is a faller for me.
Yeah, that makes sense. Blake Treinen, an obvious faller for reasons he can't help.
So here's one I want you guys to tell me how you feel about it. Because I may be on an island here, but I was really high on Aaron Nola coming in. I was the highest on him. I think we did a rankings dispute on him at one point. He was like my number eight starting pitcher, and I've moved him down in the time since then. Let me see. He is 12 for me, so not so far down, but it's not the production in spring training. He's given up some home runs. I'm not worried about that. That's not the thing that I'm worried about. I'm just... The more I think about it, the harder it is to get a past just how bad this Phillies defense could be. And the fact that he did see a rise in his fly ball rate last season, you know, the peripherals all suggest things should be fine for Aaron Nola. But if there's one way in which you can underperform your peripherals, it's with really, really bad defense. And he had really bad defense last season, but... You know, maybe that's a reason to think that he's not just going to bounce back to what the peripherals suggest the way that I hoped he would.
I'm more worried about the home runs than the defense. And I didn't like that he was giving up so many home runs early in spring. He made a start Sunday. It was amazing. He's allowed one hit, a home run, struck out nine against the Tigers.
Ton of whiffs.
Yeah. But the thing is, I mean, the Phillies had the worst defense in baseball last year. It's hard to get worse than the worst.
It was already an issue for him.
Yeah.
Well, you know, his issue last year was home runs. What I was about to say is, like, the home runs were what brought him down last year pretty clearly. It wasn't the defense. And I think just by law of averages, I mean, certainly if they remove Alec Bohm from third base, that's going to help the defensive situation. But you know, they had Zach Wheeler, who nearly won a Cy Young last year, Aaron Nola. You know, it wasn't so much the balls in play, it was the balls out of play that hurt him. And obviously he misses a ton of bats. So I hear what you're saying. I'm not worried about it in the same way. I think he's the sort of pitcher who you don't worry about that so much because.
Yeah. Like I said, for me, it's less that I'm like worried. And more that the story I was telling myself about him figuring it out or about him getting to the peripherals last season, it's a little harder for me to tell myself that story, I guess is the way I would put it.
The BABIP last year for Aaron Nola, too, it was 308. That was his highest since 2017. So
yeah,
that might have been related to the defense. And it's higher than his career mark, too. So, he was giving up more fly balls, and typically fly balls lead to, you know, more doubles, and obviously home runs don't account for BABIP, but things just kind of spiraled for Nola last year, and I added him, Chris, to my bus 2.0.
I added him to my bus as well.
I removed Carlos Rodon, and I put Aaron Nola in there. I just never find myself drafting him. If I'm in the third round, I'm taking Sandy Alcantara, or I'll wait till the next round and take like Lucas Giolito instead or something like that. So
I was drafting him earlier, but I don't think I ended up with him on any of my leagues that I'm actually playing out.
Yeah. For me, I wanted to mention Jesse Winker. He's 1-for-26 this spring. I don't think it matters all that much, but I do think maybe there could be a transition period here moving over to a new team, not as good of a ballpark to hit in. And Winker is someone that you need him to perform when he's healthy because he misses so much time. So if he gets off to a slow start, and that's something that can really affect his overall production. So Jesse Winker,
he's just a faller from the start of spring because he got traded to a worse situation.
Yep, for sure.
Yeah, I dropped him in my rankings when he got traded to the Mariners.
There was a few names I wanted to ask you guys about. Scott, Kyle Hendricks, I know someone that you liked earlier in the offseason. He's given up 12 earned runs, 6 homers over 11 and a third innings so far this spring. I don't know that it matters much for him, but he is someone who, coming off a very bad season, I kind of wanted to see something from him this spring. What do you think?
I would prefer to see something than not to see something, sure. Right. Ultimately, I feel like he's the sort of pitcher who you should ignore his spring. I mean, we've talked about it before. If he's not impeccable, then he's likely to get pounded, and it stands to reason during your warm-up phase, you're not going to be impeccable. He's identified the problem is not locating down and away well enough last year, so he's been working on that. And I've talked about it before. He had a stretch, like 15 starts in the middle of last season where he was awesome. So it's not like he was rough from beginning to end. So I think it's still in there, and you know, I'm treating him the way I would most veteran players, where if I don't have obvious reason to think there's diminished skill, I'm just not worrying about the spring numbers.
Chris, Nelson Cruz, old graybeard. I've seen this guy play a few games already spring, and I'm not used to it. It's like guy's got a lot of gray in his beard now. He's getting up there. He's 3-for-30 with 10 strikeouts. He's probably someone who doesn't even want to be in spring training, so I don't know that this matters very much, but he's older, and you know, strikeouts are something that I think we should pay attention to. So
I like the way you framed it. Like, he's getting up there and he's older. Nelson Cruz was getting up there a decade ago. he's just up there. He's been living there.
He's there
for about 7 years. Yeah. No, I don't know. Like, I guess there's a little bit of concern because of how bad he was with the Rays last season. And maybe that was the start of, you know, a decline for him, but I don't know. He was bad in spring last season and it didn't carry over into the regular season. I can't get myself worked up about anything with Nelson Cruz in spring training. I feel like the very definition of going through the motions would be how I would assume Nelson Cruz's spring training goes.
Makes sense to me. All right, we're going to wrap there. For Scott and Chris, I am Frank. Thank you all for listening and watching Fantasy Baseball Today. We'll be back again tomorrow. Bye-bye.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.